Let's talk defamation, the wrong of injuring another's reputation without good reason or justification. Following the changes to the defamation laws in most Australian states earlier this month, journalists can now argue published material to be in the public's best interests without providing evidence. Although this is somewhat of great news to journalists, what does that mean for satirists who often ridicule, as some people may see it, or call out political leaders? In an article by The Conversation earlier today, Professor Andrew Dawson and PhD candidate Jackie Brady from the University of Melbourne reflect on how the law will protect satirists. They join us now. Jackie and Andrew, welcome to 2SER.
Hello.
Hi.
Let's start with the major difference between a journalist and a satirist. Am I saying that right? I know it's a weird word to say just quickly. Is it satirist?
Yeah, satirist is fine.
I know satirical, but can a satirist argue in the public's interest as well? Andrew, we'll start with you.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, satire is a very important tool in illuminating a number of things, how society works, how politics works, and that has a long pedigree. It goes right back to the court jester, a kind of liminal figure who was able to stand outside of society and political structures, and because of that, be effectively a commentator on those structures. And we've seen this numerous times through our lifetime. I mean, within my lifetime, I remember, for example, Monty Python's Life of Brian, which was ostensibly about comparing religion to left-wing groups, but it was actually a landmark moment in the secularizing of several societies, including where I happened to live at the time, in post-Franco Spain. So satire is a very, very important tool in the public interest, no doubt about that.
Jackie, before this change of defamation law occurred, the court would ask if there was enough legal evidence to establish a defence that both then and now cost money. How does that impact the power relations between a politician and a citizen satirist?
Yes, this is an important distinction that you just said, the word, the citizen satirist. You know, a lot of satirists that the public might be more familiar with have the backing of big media agencies with legal advice at their disposal. The citizen satirist, which is an example we've just had with the Friendly Geordies, is someone who gets on YouTube and does satire that way. So it certainly offers a bit more flexibility for how they can pursue their craft, because they won't self-censor as much. Self-censure is how you spell that. Sorry, I just said it wrong myself. So it means that it does offer a bit more freedom from the risk of, you know, defamation costs a lot of money. A defamation case costs a lot to answer. And a lot of people don't speak out because of the fear of defamation, because of the cost of it. Mm. So this has some caps on those and some ways that, you know, has to be serious harm to reputation and things like that, so before it will get off the ground. So it certainly offers the citizen who is being satirical in a YouTube video or even just in a commentary on Twitter or Facebook more room to maneuver around the potential costs of defamation.
So just on that note, do you think the Friendly Geordies should be allowed to kind of keep doing what he's doing then?
I think that's not up to me. I think that's up to the Friendly Geordies and also what the courts will reveal from the current dispute. But, you know, it is a type of satire. Mm. And it's a type of satire that we have seen in Australia. And I know there were some comments on our article about it not being very good satire from some people's opinions. Mm. But it's a form of satire that has been around, as Andy was saying, as long as the court jester has, and it's known as juvenilian. Note the juvenile part of that particular form of satire. So that form of satire is insult-based, is name-calling, is in a particular context. And this is the thing with satire. And I suppose that is a danger for citizen satirists too, is that they need to delineate the space they are in as satire quite clearly.
Sure.
So, yeah, so it's a particular form of satire. And I think our culture changes, the norms we are prepared to accept as a culture changes over time. And the audience ultimately defines the popularity of a citizen satirist. So in the Friendly Geordie's case, they've got a very strong following, and that following is representative of a particular view in the community.
We'll go to you now, Andrew. Many, if not all of us, has either been defamed or defamed someone at some point on their social media. Your article mentions a concern of politician sensitivity. What sort of audience power do you think satire has that a piece of reporting doesn't?
Actually, if you don't mind, I'd rather Jackie answer that one. She's better qualified to answer that. I think I'm better talking about the relationships between journalism and satire and where the boundaries lie. But Jackie, could you answer that?
Yes, yeah, certainly. I think there's a whole lot of even evolutionary uses for humour. And I think when you look at the physiology of humour, humour is a way we cope with stress. And when there are unbalanced power relations, humour is a way that is an almost an equalising contributing thing to relieving that stress. And look, I come from a long line of people who are famous for laughing at inappropriate things and getting in trouble for it.
Yep.
And you know, the thing where, you know, someone laughs at a funeral, it's often not a choice. It's often a limbic system response. It's part of our coping mechanisms as people. So I think laughter has this, if you look at the literature at this, which I'm in a deep dive of at the moment, it often gets referred to as a sleeper effect. It's almost a way that wakes us up and makes us look at things differently. And there's also a parallel argument to that we only laugh at things that resonate with our own belief systems, which can be true too. So I think it has a particularly different way of getting through to us, if that makes sense.
Sure.
In that context.
Yeah. Just lastly, I'll throw this last question to you, Andrew, now. In the United States, the law is more in favour of the media, usually, whereas a public figure needs to prove that the published material is not true and that the publication didn't mean to do harm. Why do you think it is so different here, and is this change a step closer to free press?
I mean, what these cases illuminate is that of different contexts is that the boundaries between journalism and satire are very, very blurred. You know, they're ostensibly clear, you know, journalism's about writing news that can be broadcast, and satire is about comedically entertaining, but often using real world and politics as the substantive content. But the reality of the matter is that they're very, very blurred. I mean, sometimes, even especially in tabloid journalism, for example, the satire trumps the journalism. One thinks, for example, of the famous News of the World headline of London bus found on the moon, and this transmogrifies often into fake news. And indeed, we have cases of politicians emerging from the world of satire, you know, Pepe Grillo, the head of the Five Star Movement in Italy, and indeed one might even argue Boris Johnson, the current Prime Minister of Britain, who became famous through appearing on the satire programme Have I Got News For You, and his whole stick as a politician, if you like, is as a kind of self-satirist. Which is producing a new kind of political class, actually, that I think is kind of worryingly unserious, as many people have observed with regards to the Prime Minister's behaviour during the pandemic and the kind of almost comedic way in which he mishandled it. So it's not really an answer to your question, but what I'm trying to get to you is that in different contexts, this is getting to your question, different contexts around the world, will produce different kinds of responses about how they negotiate that tricky issue of the boundary between what's satire and what's journalism. In terms of the specific distinction between the US and Australia, Jackie, I mean, what do you reckon on that?
I think we come more traditionally from the UK school. You know, I mean, I'm looking at writing a chapter on the UK school and its influence on Australian satire. And but then there's this sort of, we're sort of, you'd stand alone in a unique sense because we've got this discourse around the larrikin Australia, you might, the larrikin comedy in Australia, which tends to be more of that juvenilian form. So I think we're a bit of a blend. It's a bit like our political system, you know, sometimes our political system's referred to as Washminster, a combination of Washington and Westminster. So I think it is, I think we are influenced by the United States, but we don't follow the United States in a comedy way. We don't have as many late night hosts. We don't have as many monologues. We don't have Samantha Bee. We don't have Saturday Night Live like we used to have. And in our article, we talked about some of the previous incarnations of Australian satire, like The Big Gig and Newsweek and Good Newsweek and some of those.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Can I just add to something Jackie said here? Just to, you know, you would expect there might be a relaxed attitude to satire in Australia precisely because of what Jackie says. We're a kind of supposedly a larrikin society, right? This is the quintessential stereotype of Australia, a lover of rule breaking, taking a piss and making fun. But the reality of a lot of nations, and especially settler nations like Australia, is that the stereotypes are often the converse of the reality. Yeah. And the reality of Australia is, as a settler colonial society, it is incredibly rule bound. So in a sense, the stereotype of the larrikin is what conceals its obverse, the opposite, which is of Australia as a very rule-governed society. Because, and it is a rule-governed society in extremis for a very obvious reason. Because it's a colonial society. It was made by a colonizing power that sought to develop it as an enlightenment project governed by rules and procedures and rational principles. Now, how does this impact upon comedy? Well, I would say it's to do, it impacts on it in the sense that we're less tolerant over here for rule infractions in satire than perhaps in many other contexts.
Sure. Okay. Guys, we're going to have to leave it at that. Thank you so much for joining me on 2SER, and I appreciate your passionate responses on this topic.
Thank you.
No worries. Thanks for having us.